Welcome back to Soul Practice. We're raw conversations and real practices. I'm Phyllis Mathis.
And I'm Kathy Escobar. And as you all know, we love to play with our friends here and there. Phyllis and I are used to walking on Monday mornings, and we walk together with my dog, Raina, and we walk around the lake, and we pretty much talk about any and all things that are troubling us and that we hope is different in the world and what we're trying to wrestle with. And we come back and record. And then other times we get on a different platform of Zoom and talk to our friends who are living in other places. And so today we're really happy to have a new friend. This is a new friend, Mark Iaconelli. And Mark is a storyteller and author, has written several books and has a new one. It's called, I think it's Between the Listening and the Telling, How Stories Can Save Us. And Mark's dad wrote A Messy Spirituality. And that was a book for me way back when. I mean, it was a long time ago that I read and really resonated with, because so many wild things about that weird little community that he was talking about were similar to The Refuge. But over the years, you know, I've changed a lot and grown a lot. And then circles connect. And so Mark is good friends with several good friends of mine and was doing a book tour for his new book, which is really awesome stuff. And so came to Denver and said, the Refuge is like, hey, come here. And he did. And it was an amazing night because Mark held space for the simplicity of story. And what happened in that room that night was really magical because it was so simple, but it was so meaningful to remember things and to know that really stories can save us. And I'll share more because I got a little feedback later that was just so beautiful and I want you to know. But for right now, we just want to say, Mark, we're glad you're here. Tell us more about you and, you know, why stories can save us.
Well, what can I say? Stories are the language of experience. And I guess I'm someone who's always kind of hungered for real, you guys use the word raw, you know, real raw experience. There's so many ways we separate from ourselves or distract ourselves or stay in sort of this anxious quiver and aren't really attentive to ourselves and others. And I am one of those people who has difficulty being attentive or being present. And so stories is another attempt in my life to be present to myself, be present to others, and present to the world. I worked in contemplative practice for a long time. I worked with the Center for Engaged Compassion, where we used different compassion practices. It's all kind of the same. I've been in the same ballpark, basically, which is, you know, how do we reckon, you know, is the word, with what, who we are and how we're living. And it's just, I'm still fascinated by that process and still struggling with it.
So I love the title of your book, Between the Listening and the Telling. What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, the order matters to me. You know, the listening is the most important thing. So nobody can share a story unless there's a good listener. If I'm trying to tell you something and I notice you're glancing at your phone, it shuts me down, right? But if the listening is open and you're present and you're right there with me, then you start pulling things out from me that I wasn't expecting or that are surprising. And even this magic can happen where suddenly I'm also a listener and I'm sitting next to you and we're both listening to these experiences coming out of my mouth, you know? So the listening is important, but I'm also interested in that magic of what happens between us. And it's a kind of exchange of gifts, where one person is offering their presence. You know, I'll listen. It's like throwing a ball back and forth. You know, I'll listen, and then you give me whatever it is you're holding or whatever you're carrying, whether it's a joy or a curiosity or something. And that's this exchange of gifts of listening and telling. And in that exchange of gifts, there's a relief. It's like the work of living on the surface of our lives, you know, which social media and our culture is always drawing us to stay on the surface, but that, which is a lot, it's a lot of work to stay on the surface. Well, in the listening and telling, we sort of drop in and take deep breaths and feel the relief of just being with another human being. So it's you know, we're relational creatures, and when we get to interact and mirror back to one another or regulate our bodies in speaking and listening, we come home, and that's a kind of liberation.
I love that. You're kind of speaking my language. I have this thing about conversation, I guess, that it's generative. You know, if you have two people who are listening and telling and conversing, it's almost as, and you talked about someone pulling from you things that maybe either you didn't know were there or you didn't know were salient or whatever. And the magic of that interchange, there's nothing I love more. I just think there's a kind of a, almost like a organism that gets created in that space between two people that wasn't there before. And it's a creation of something magical, like you said. I love that so much.
And you know, this, and I use the word creation, and I think it is creative as well. But you know, the sorrow is that, you know, all day long, many of us are interacting with people, and we're missing, we're not connecting like that, you know. So we're sort of alone together. And that's a real tragedy, you know. I mean, that happens in families and workspaces and public spaces. And in the little workshop that Kathy was in, it doesn't take that much, you know, it takes a kind of trust. But if you invite people, I mean, if you create the space, right, and ask a simple question and create some strict rules, like I will say, hey, one person's going to share a story, the other person, you're not allowed to ask questions or comment, you know, just a kind of a strict rule like that, so that they're forced, well, I guess I have to listen then. And suddenly they can drop into this way of being human that they know, but that they rarely get to experience. And that's the kind of sorrow of this time, is we're all speaking past one another, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there are so few spaces to really drop in. And that night at the refuge was really magical because we had a mix. It's refuge, you know, so there's people who live outside or in vehicles, and then, you know, suburban moms and people with a lot of financial resources and everything in between. But one of the things that came up from a message that I got was how holy it really was, and how just having the space to think about some things, which is you were a master facilitator. And I was telling Phil, it's like facilitation is my number one, like, pet peeve is bad facilitation. And like, it just makes me nutty in a group. And I said, Mark, you just stepped into this group and held the space like so beautifully. And it was, I just felt a huge exhale. I was like, we're in great hands. And we were, and you set it up in such a simple way, but the feedback that I got was, oh my gosh, thinking about some of these things has really opened up thinking about some of these things. And I realized that I haven't said some things out loud, or even in my own way of just kind of carrying on with my life, I forgot about that piece of me. And I tended to it, and it opened it up. And then, you know, they shared with me this really important and deep and hard thing to say out loud. And then we had common experience in it. And and I think the part that I was just really struck by is the hunger. There's like that hunger to have a place to be able to do. And that's why I like recovery meetings, you know, because people just like go there. They're not up in theory. You know, we're not up in theory. We're just like, oh my gosh, this happened. And this is what I'm wrestling with. And this is what I'm struggling with. And then everyone's, you know, has that shared thing. It just makes me wonder, in all the stories that like you're hearing a lot of stories, you're holding space for a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. Are there like common things that no matter what, always, always emerge?
Well, I mean, a little bit what you expressed. So yeah, I've done events with college kids and I did a thing in Austin, was, I think it was 100 folks, but it was children and youth and adults, you know, so it's kind of fun to see that happen. And a lot of people, they don't, as you mentioned, don't get a chance to savor their lives. So we are trained to live in a narrow band of who we are. You know, we're trained to just see ourselves the way the world invites us to show up, which is at this kind of surface functionary level, or, you know, appearance, affluence, achievement. You know, those are the three ways that the world cares about it. But we have these other weird, wild, interesting, raw, you know, helpless, gorgeous parts of ourselves. But if no one invites us to turn our attention towards them, we can forget about them. So we're like a person who has this incredible mansion, but they've been living on the front porch their whole lives. They've gone inside, you know, and seen the rooms and the ballroom and the study with all the books and all that stuff. You know, that's kind of our inner life. So when I ask a question, and usually the first question, and like if people are listening right now, is what's a place that you loved when you were young? You know, some place you loved when you were a child, maybe, or maybe a little older. Maybe it was a place you went to one time in your whole life. You went to the Pacific Ocean and you camped outside of Mendocino with your mom. Or maybe it was a backyard that your grandmother had where she had an orchard of apple trees. Or maybe it was a park that was around the corner and you loved the basketball courts there, whatever. So when somebody asks you that and you say, huh, and you pause and you go back and you're like, I completely forgot, you know, my friends and I, there was a vacant lot, you know, right next to downtown. And we did so many things there. We used to take cardboard boxes and build forts. We used to, you know, dig and look for worms, you know, and it was such a wild place. And, you know, and all of a sudden you remember the friends of that time, the emotions of that time, the place of that time, and a part of your landscape opens up to you. And I think when you come out of remembering, and especially when it's shared, someone listening to you, so it expands, you see it resonate in the body of the listener, you have a greater capacity to hold whatever it is you're going through. You know, it's kind of a sideways thing. Like you might be just super stressed because you've been trying to buy a home for 4 years and now it feels like it'll never happen. You know, you're always going to be paying this exorbitant rent. And somebody asks you to remember this place and remember this wider, freer moment, and it changes how you hold things. Your body is different. So that's what I notice happening to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing, can I just say, because I start to get excited about this stuff, even though I deal with it all the time, but is that it's so accessible. You know, so I've worked in spiritual practice, you know, I did spiritual direction. I worked at a seminary for 10 years. And sometimes you're trying to teach centering prayer, which again, accessible, but it's a certain kind of skill you're kind of teaching to be in silence, like, or Buddhist practice. Storytelling, we do it all day long. You know, we tell, the grocery store was weird today, or this guy on the highway was driving like a madman. You know, we're always sharing our experiences. So we can all do this kind of asking good questions and listening with generous ears. But it's just so democratic and accessible if people will just do a couple things. So, you know, that's what I get excited about, is like, this is free, you know, liberative practices, you know?
Yeah. For free. It's kind of weird that we have to, in this day and age, relearn that.
Yeah.
The simplicity kind of escapes us and feels mysterious to us. But I love how you put that.
Yeah, like, you know, the holidays are coming up, and as we're recording this, I don't know when this will play, but in groups that I'm leading, people will immediately go like, we need to do this around the table for Thanksgiving or for Christmas, whatever holiday season they're in, because they understand that they're not really connecting. There's a desire to connect, but these family dynamics take over, or Uncle Bob talks the whole time, and, you know, and that there's another way to ask good questions and to create a listening space where we could finally kind of meet the heart's desire to feel seen and heard by those we love. And once people kind of catch that, it's really exciting just watching the room, people going, oh my gosh, okay, I'm going to ask this question around the table. We're going to talk about meals we've loved, and everybody's going to get 3 minutes, you know, even the little ones. And we'll go around the table and we'll put strict rules on Uncle Bob, and we'll make sure everybody gets to hear, you know, and speak. And it's great.
Yeah, it makes me think too how we had an episode, and a good friend of ours who is just an amazing chaplain and space holder for people, Aram Hartooni, and he did a piece on presence is everything. And, you know, that's what's so like relevant in this, is that to basically be available for these conversations, like, we have to be present. And then with really no agenda, with no, I mean, it's, I love facilitated things too, but all the other places where it's actually just like seeing someone's humanity and making space, and you never know what's going to happen in that moment, and, but being available for it. And then these things come out and you're like, oh my gosh. And I have to say, as a person who has had such deep grief of losing our son, that I have always worked in hard spaces. My job has always, and my life has always been in recovery and in vulnerability and in honesty in the church and everything that was about really sharing your true story. But one thing that I did not fully get until Jared died was how everybody is walking around like in the moment carrying these huge things. And I didn't really realize it in that same way. I mean, I knew that I had a painful story full of shame and all these things, and I learned how to tell it, and then people connected with it and it helped me heal and all that. But I remember when we went out after Jared died, and we went to a drive-thru, and we had to go get this fabric at the store. And I remember what it was like to like pull up an order and have someone take the order. And then I was like, I started to go, I can't do this, but we have to run this errand. And we went into the store and we bought fabric. It was just so stupid for his memorial service, but I needed to do it. And I told Jose, I was like, I cannot do anything like that. But my point was, there's tons of people doing this. Because we're all carrying these huge things, trying to, huge and small, I mean, everything in between, but like we're showing up, and it's like this openness to knowing like, oh my gosh, that person I'm talking to just is wrestling. They're getting divorced right now. Mm-hmm. They're trying to leave an abusive relationship right now. Their mom died. Their kid died. They're just filed for bankruptcy. Like all the things, like I could go on and on, but like that awareness. And I think something did open up for me to be more tender to other people. Know that everyone has got some big shit going on when they're ordering in a drive-thru, and the person that's giving them their order or whatever it is.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, this thing that I'm trying to understand of this sort of listening and telling and trying to create spaces where we have conversation at a deeper level, something that happens, like as you referenced, you know, in recovery groups all the time. But how do we, you know, like, how do we create recovery space for the rest of us, you know, for all of us? Yeah. Is these are folk medicines, you know, these are folk medicines that every human being is wired to do. We're all wired to listen. We're all wired for empathy and compassion. And we're all wired to seek to tell our experience, to tell a story. I was in a fabric store. I was trying to get this fabric. You know, I mean, we speak in story all the time to try to help others. You know, story is the language. It's the way, it's full body meaning making. We're trying to help another body see the fabric, see you in that store, you know, feel the room, hear you talking to Jose. You know, you're trying to help us see and hear and feel that. And we want to, you know, our ears and hearts stretched even through these virtual mechanisms we're using here. And I try to, I've never seen Jose before, but I'm trying to picture him, you know, as you're talking to him, like, I can't do this. And I'm trying to feel and see the desperation that you were feeling or whatever. And that's, and everybody's heart's wired this way. You know, it's just beautiful. And we can do this with one another, but we're rarely given the space and time. So this kind of stuff would happen naturally, right? Around a table where it's, we don't have a million things pulling at us. We don't have a million devices trying to entertain us or distract us. So what did we have? All we had was one another. So you sit around a table, you linger, you tell stories, and you feel each other, or that's possible anyways. Yeah. And so how do we release these folk medicines in all of us, you know, is the question.
Mm. Yeah. And as you're talking, I can't stop thinking this thought. So I'm going to just say it. When we're talking about holding space, like we're using that phrase a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And I kind of know how to do that individually. And I'm sometimes in the presence of people who hold space for larger things. And Kathy's one of them, like watching her facilitate. It's just so natural. But every time I ask Kathy how she does things, she just is like, well, you just, uh-huh. You know, and I'm kind of hearing the same thing from you. But the art, the soul art of holding space, it's like someone needs to start. And I get that in individual stuff because that's my bread and butter. But I get really nervous when I'm in a group or when like a surface needs to be broken or somebody needs to do the thing. And I sometimes do that really clumsily if I'm not in charge of it. And then if I'm in charge of it, my big anxiety is, how do I get people to start the magic? You know, like, I don't know what, like, it doesn't necessarily come naturally to me. And then the people it does come naturally to, like the two of you, are kind of like, what's the problem? You know? So I'd kind of like to, it's not like I want to step it, you know, like step one, you know, do this, step two, do that. It's an art and it's a soul capacity. But I've been in the presence of people who hold such strong containers just by something about them. And I'm wondering if you could maybe put words on that thing that we all experience when someone starts or when someone holds the space, or what you're always looking for to break the surface tension of the dinner table or of the, mm-hmm. you know, congregation or of the group.
Well, you know, so this is a lot of my work is I train community builders in how to use story to help communities heal or strengthen relationships or mobilize for justice movements or whatever. And so I do go into steps.
Good. So, okay.
And right, there are people, and you're right, Kathy's a total natural. It's so close to her. I don't, you know, it would be hard for her to even, she probably wouldn't even be able to say all the steps because some stuff is just so natural, you know. But,
there are steps though, you know, yeah, so I steps, can't wait yeah. to hear yours. There are some factors or something. There's some like tracks that help it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, here's one little tip that I've learned is to not be precious about it. So I used to do trainings with spiritual directors, and spiritual directors like working with a room full of opera singers. You know, they're very sensitive people, you know, and that's part of their gift, right? Is they have highly sensitive, but like, you know, the drinks need to be a certain way, or that light is bothering me, or can someone do something about that buzz in the microphone, you know, stuff like that. But, and sometimes when we do these kinds of things with groups, we can be really precious about it, which actually just creates more anxiety. Like, okay, we're all around the table. You're at Thanksgiving. Around the table, we're each going to share a special moment, and you have 3 minutes. And this is going to be a time of really connecting deeply with one another. You know, it's like, oh, everybody is already like, I don't want to be here. And this is weird. So, you know, so I always tell people to, you know, carry it lightly. And we're just going to try this. It may not work. You may not think of anything, but we're going to go around the table. And then I do put rules around how we're going to engage. So I have a kind of informal attitude. Like, we're going to try this thing. I heard this guy in this podcast. Okay. So I just want to try this. I know we don't normally do this at Thanksgiving. We're going to try this. Everybody's going to get 3 minutes to talk about a meal or time you had food that was special to you. You know, you really connected. Maybe it was a birthday or a holiday. I'll give some examples so people can, and I'm talking so people can think of it. So I'm talking, you know, maybe think of a meal. Maybe it was just two people. It was a romantic meal or whatever. We're each going to, or a food you really loved. Each person can get 3 minutes, and you, the other people, we can't ask questions and we can't comment. It's going to feel awkward because we're going to want to interrupt and say something, but we're not going to. We're just going to see what happens. And so then you launch them and you follow the rules. So somebody starts to interrupt. You say, no, no, Bob, we're not going to interrupt. We're just going to try this. And the magic will show up. It just does, because the first person might be weird. Like, well, all I could think of is the time I had fajitas because I love fajitas. And that's all they say.
Yeah.
But then one person will kind of go out in the water a little bit and say, huh, favorite meal. Well, I was remembering 40 years ago, you know, after the wedding, you know, George here and I, we went to a little hamburger place, and it was just the two of us. Nobody knew we had just gotten married that morning. Mm-hmm. And we sat in this little thing. We talked to this old couple, and they'll tell some moment, you know, and that'll stir somebody else. And the work then as the facilitator is just to trust. You know, just you set out the rules, you try not to make it too precious, and you trust that something will happen. And it's nail biting, you know, because the first person did such a bad job, and the second person was terrible, and they talked too much and didn't say anything. And you know, you're just like, this is a disaster. But you just have to hang on. I mean, even though I've done a million of these, I'm always nervous, you know.
Okay, well, that helps.
Yeah. I'm doing groups right now where I've done some colleges where it's like 60 college kids and none of them want to be there. They're all forced to be there because they're in a class. So they hate, you know, they're held I'm with hostages. And I got to figure out a way to put them in groups and have them get the phones down and talk. And when they're all looking at me like, we hate this, we just want this to be over. And so even with, you know, a hostile audience, I just keep trusting somebody say something real, please. Somebody remembers something. And it happens.
Yeah, see, I love that. And I just love how awkward the entrance can be, you know, and then this is so true. Like, as people who do hold space, like, there's once you open the floor, whatever that floor looks like, whether it's around a small table or a big table or anything in between, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
And so, and that is anxiety provoking, you know? And so I think that part of just, but being open to that magic is worth it. And, you know, I say this at the Refuge all the time. I was like, you have to have glasses like that you put on to see really into the beauty and dignity and hope of humans. Like, if you can't see that in the mess, it will just be too hard to be here, because it's just got too many itchy things that are like, you never know. And, you know, am I going to be trapped in this conversation for 30 minutes and, you know, things like that are really hard. And that's why I do like, when it's, you know, some of this is natural too, just like in with friends and, you know, like when Phyllis and I are walking, like, we don't have any problems, you know, but I think this healing the world through the ripple effects of storytelling, then it does take some spaces that help us do that. And in that facilitation, it's like having some guidelines really help. Like when you did that at the Refuge, it was just perfect. But what happened is because it was like, take these minutes and then just each share and just say, thanks for sharing, which in recovery is like my favorite three words. And, but I did want it. We all wanted to hear more. We all wanted to talk more. We all wanted to say, oh my gosh, me too. And then that makes me think of that. And, you know, kind of that building off of it. And mm-hmm. I was just thinking, like, in its most simplest form, is just whatever venues we're in, a chance for someone to say whatever, and then hopefully there's room for tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah. And so, you know, so I get this really get to help work with others who are community builders in all different kinds of ways and watch how they, you know, because they, like you were saying, Phyllis, they're like, I don't lead groups, but they'll go into a group. For example, this, there was a community, Gold Hill in Oregon. They cut their taxes, got rid of the police. Two guys affiliated with white supremacist groups decided they were going to start a neighborhood watch, right? So some moms who have children of color were super freaked out, and rightfully so, right? Mm-hmm. When they looked up, studied the background of these guys. They said, so this community organizer that I know said, let's get people together to start talking about whether we want this here or not. People came together, they fought. They argued, they fought, they could not decide on whether to have this neighborhood watch. They wanted some protection, but it didn't work. They had three subsequent meetings. It got more and more scary. She was doing this training with me, but she wasn't implementing any of the techniques I was doing because she was like, this doesn't work. But she got so desperate and things got so bad, she went to one meeting and said, okay, I just went to this training. Can we try this? 45 people from the town are in the room deciding whether we keep neighborhood watch with these guys who have racist ties or whether we get rid of it. And she said, here's what we're going to do. Everybody take 1 minute and share a moment where you felt safe. And so that took, you know, 45 minutes or 50 minutes, right? And this woman said, I couldn't believe it. When we got to the end, we were united. We all knew this is what we want. We all want to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And we don't feel safe with what's going on now. And we could suddenly do the business and do the work and find a way. And so they got rid of that neighborhood watch. The three women ran for city council after that and made it on the city council. But it took her willing to trust the group and find a way of allowing everyone to share their human experience in a democratic and equitable way. Mm-hmm. And that allowed the magic to show. And that happens time and time again, but it's, you know, it's like you guys are about practice. It's trusting the practice or trusting the process and allowing others to have the ball and not just control it, you know. I watch you, Kathy, you know, you can hold the space just by yourself. You could tell stories and teach, and you could kind of, you know, hold the attention of the group, and people would leave going, that was a great moment, but it's a great time to be at the refuge. But it's a whole different thing when you say, I'm going to hold back and I'm going to pass the ball around, let everybody play. Mm-hmm. That takes
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm just saying it takes a deep trust because you don't know what's going to happen. But that trust is the magic.
It's really affirming in a good, in a beautiful way, because that is a piece of our culture and kind of the culture of all the things that we, you know, things Phyllis and I do together outside, you know, just different parts, but it is like actually going around the room. So like, it just brings my heart so much joy to hear about giving space for 45 people.
Right.
To have a minute. And right. That is so underrated because mm-hmm. this happens all the time. Like, oh, there's not enough time, you know, but if you're clear about the time, it's just like hearing from everybody and there's nothing. We always have at the refuge, like freedom to pass, but there is this, a lot of people, some people do, but some people don't. And then you hear from people that normally never share. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh my gosh, that was the thing we all needed today. And but it kind of just points to some of our bad experiences too, in like with people, and some of us come from a, you know, conservative sort of Christianity that was like, when you share, people want to fix you and tell you a solution or put a God little band-aid on it or whatever crosstalky thing happens that shuts us down. And so, or being in groups that are like, there is a free for all. And so there's not a safety in there. And so we're, you know, some people are traumatized. They're like, I don't want to be in a group because I don't want to like have that experience. And so like creating, I feel like you're really good at creating a corrective experience about groups when you really like make that space and you hold it, but then also leave room for what people can do to take it with them. Like everything can't happen in that moment. That's another piece. Like the story I got kind of happened afterwards because it was like, I said part of it, but then it made me think of these other things. And so it like expanded or whatever.
Wow. And the great thing about story is that it works at the level beneath right and wrong, true and false. So, you talked about, like giving advice and all that kind of stuff. But when we just share our experience, it's, we're in a more creative kind of realm of just living with each other in the spell of our memories. So, yeah, so this is the stuff that I just love.
Well, go ahead, Phyllis.
I love talking about it, and I love hearing from you and you, Kathy, about just that. I loved what you said about trusting. And I think that's my personal barrier as a leader is, trusting the people in the room and trusting the vulnerability, setting the stage for vulnerability to kind of break through this, whatever resistance might be there, and then sharing that humanity together. I just really love that.
Yeah. And I mean, can I just kind of maybe close here with an image?
Absolutely.
I got to work in schools in 2021. We had wildfires that destroyed 3,500 homes, 5,000 people or more displaced. So I went to a school, a third of the kids had lost their homes, this one high school. And they, I have to pause for a second here. Somebody's at the door. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Marcus, we don't edit.
Yeah, well, I wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, he's back. Oh, okay, good. I mean, I can edit, but we try not to edit.
Great.
This will be a really fun edit.
I'm not going to edit.
Oh no,
it'll be right here.
It'll be right. Okay.
What happens?
Okay, so I'm in this high school. These kids, high anxiety, high depression. We know this is happening right now, coming out of, and so we were asked to use story to help kids connect. So day one, we're doing stories like a place you love or a weird encounter with an animal, and kids are talking and telling these experiences. And they're all saying like, we never get to talk about our lives at school. You know, we're always talking about other things. And so they're really enjoying the connection. We get to the end of the week. What's a moment this past year? Share a moment this past year where you were struggling. So kids are in groups of six, they have their masks on, they're 6 feet apart, but they start telling these stories and they all scoot in and they're talking in lower voices, talking quieter, and they're sharing these moments in small groups. When it gets done, I say, what was that like? What did you notice in sharing these moments of struggle? And these are 14, 15, 16-year-old kids. One kid, big guy, 6'2", Seattle Seahawks t-shirt, raises his hand and says, that was joyful. So I say, joyful. Well, you were telling moments of struggle. Why was it joyful? He said, well, every story in my group was depressing, but I saw myself in each person when they told their story. And that was joyful, right?
Wow.
That's the longing. And that's what I trust is in the room when I'm in any space with others.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
I know, me too.
So beautiful. So beautiful, Mark. And I'm so glad that we know you and that some other people that maybe don't know you who are listening can learn more about you and know you also. And so one of the things we always do at the end of soul practice is share just like this reminder for our souls. That's Phyllis. And we'll do this at the very end. We'd love to hear from you. And then maybe just a little practice. Something that like this, even in the smallest way that we can do to embody some of these things that help our soul. And so I was thinking about how if you're listening and you're like, well, I don't hold space for groups or I don't do this. It's like, no, we're all in on this. This has nothing to do with just being a facilitator because we're all in relationship with people. Mm-hmm. And so I just love a thought for the soul and a practice as we close.
Well, yeah, the thing about the soul is, for me anyways, the soul is, and you talked about this earlier, is the place that holds grief. And you talked about everyone grieving. And when I can't hold it, the soul is that place in me that's holding it. And until I'm ready. And then if I could just say one other thing, the soul is also the place that holds wonder. And so it's holding those things in me. And I can go down and visit and be with that part of myself whenever I am able to. But if I'm not, it's okay. You know, because, you know, like a mother cradling a child, those that part of me is cradling me or holding those parts of me. And that gives me peace. And in the practice, you know, everyone longs for a good question and a listening ear. So if you're in a dynamic with a friend or a family member and it just feels stuck, start finding a question that just throws you out of the normal neuro pathways. Like, when were the first time you danced? Did you ever go to a dance when you were younger? Or, when's a time, would you ever experience kindness from a stranger? Or so everybody wants to be asked a good question. So as a practice, ask people questions that allow them to share experiences from their lives, and then listen and enjoy the telling.
Oh my goodness. I love it. Yeah. Love it. Phyllis, thought for the soul to remember.
Well, I'm just going to take away this idea of trust. And I think that, that trust is sort of an aspect of faith, which is a product or substance of the soul. And that having the courage, I mean, there's trust, there's courage, there's faith, there's vulnerability, you know, that it all sort of talks about this process of being present in a way that allows your soul to be seen or known or heard. Mm-hmm. And that membrane of trust, you know, and religion was all about not having to take risks, you know, not having to not know. Religion was always, for me, like the opposite of faith or trust or soulfulness. And so there's always this moment of risk when we allow ourselves to be seen. And that is a substance, really, that the soul thrives on. And just knowing that, for me, and finding those like membranes or those thresholds for me of just allowing myself to be present and be seen in an unpolished way. So that, I guess, I don't know how to put that into a soundbite about the soul, but it is a soulful substance. And I always need to remember that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. On practice, the thought that came to mind, it kind of builds on what Mark said, but like, what if something this happens in recovery in our meetings, it's like, okay, you can share about this step, or you can just share something that you need to say out loud today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that we do this a lot in other refuge circles too. Like, just go, what do you just like need to say out loud today? And mm-hmm. it's as simple as that. And because when I'm asked that question, I mean, I really can kind of go to where I'm at today and just mm-hmm. say something out loud. So I think that's a practice to consider in conversation with our people and maybe ourselves. So asking ourselves, what do we need to say out loud today that I'm kind of keeping in? So Mark, I'm so glad that Phyllis and you met. Makes me so happy. You're meant to know each other, and our friends are meant to know you. And so the Hearth Community, I think, is .com. Is that your website?
Oh. Yes, or easier to remember is howstoriescansaveus.com.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. That's So howstoriescansaveus.com. Go there. The book's awesome. Mark's awesome. Does all kinds of cool things that people can access. And we're just thanks for being with us, and thanks for listening, everyone listening. This is Soul Practice, and we try to have raw conversations together and bring them into real practice. So we'll look forward to next time.